Thanks for finding me again here at Organic Matters. And finally, for this last part of the show, I'm going to make every effort to make at least most of this quarter or this part of the show good news. It always seems that I always get on the bad. Well, when things need fixed, so you got to talk about them. When it's good news, it's pleasant to know, but it doesn't need to be worked on. I'm going to give you I'm going to call them good news factoid. And here's a good start. Last December, in the wintering grounds of the Eastern Monarch Butterfly in central Mexico near Michoacán, the area covered by butterflies hugging trees and huddling together through the cold months was 35% higher than the year before and covered 7 acres of land. It was a little over 4.5 or 5 last year. So that's good news. That's a hopeful sign of for the population that's recovering from all the all-time low of just 1.6 acres back in 2013. That's a tiny area for all those animals to have to go to. Surveys by the World Wildlife Fund and other organizations going back as far as 93 show a population that fluctuated annually but steadily declined until a low in 2013. Since then, the species has been rebounding slowly, although their numbers are still substantially lower than the levels back in the 1990s when we started. As with any natural population, there are fluctuations. There are many, many factors that affect any animal or plant population, and these fluctuations are normal within a range. But even considering those fluctuations, we are seeing an increase in monarch populations. A ranch I was helping to oversee for years, finally, I convinced them to let me put in 20 acres, 22 acres to be exact, of milkweed dedicated just to monarchs. Now, that was not inexpensive, folks. Guess I'm not supposed to tell how much money they spent. Doesn't matter. But I can tell you this. Think about it. A pound of really refined milkweed seed, which to most people is a weed, ran about $200 a pound at the time. Anyway, back to the Eastern Monarchs spend their winter months in Central America. In the spring, they begin a long, and it's a multi-generational migration north back into the United States and all the way into Canada, where they do their actual breeding. What goes on is as they come up, most people think, I guess, they spend the whole winter in Mexico and then fly all the way back, some of them, to Canada. They do not. They start flying north when the weather gets nice enough and they go so many miles when they go no further. They lay eggs. That generation has to mature and fly so far. Then the next generation. So it takes them several generations to get back from the south, back up north, to breed. And when the season's over, of course, they generationally move their way back into Mexico, where that one does winter over. It is alive until it gets warmed up to head back north the next year. So it's extremely complicated. It's a wonder they are in the numbers they're in. But at this moment, they're increasing. And the real reason is we did see the big crash in 2013 at a number of bigger companies, lumber companies, some of them, have taken areas and overplanted with milkweed, and there are actually more milkweed now available on the route than there was 5 or 8 years ago. It was at an all-time low, and we are, with people like the ranch that I'm working with or was working with, put an acre here and 2 acres there and leaving along the road and the byways and in between fence rows, and you don't have to just plant milkweed. Remember, the milkweed is only for the caterpillar to hatch on and eat to become a chrysalis, to become a butterfly. The butterflies themselves can use the pollen from a number of different wonderful plants, which I can even get you a list for if you'd like to write me at natureapproved@yahoo.com. And then you can help participate in securing bigger populations again of one of my favorite bugs, insects, and that's the monarch butterfly. While we're on the bug question, the insect question, either a week ago or 2 weeks ago, I've already done a quarter of my show on the fact that we are losing insects. I've just found an update that I think fits in, so I will quote this to you. It's just a short minute or two from Earthwise, but it's an update from what I was telling you last week, I think it was. In recent years, there's been increasing awareness of the global decline of insects worldwide, obviously. A recently published survey of the abundance of flying insects in this is in UK, in the United Kingdom, revealed a very long, troubling results. The Kent Wildlife Trust and Bug Life is the name of it, two UK-based conservation groups, compared the numbers of dead insects in the years from 2004 all the way to 2021, collected of all things. Now, I talked about this last week on cars. In this Bugs Matter survey, the data collected by roughly 20,000 ordinary citizens, mostly using their smartphone apps. That was last week I talked about that. Here's the results, though. The number of flying insects in Britain dropped 60% over that, 16-year period. The insect decline in most of England and Wales dropped from 65% in some areas to at least as low as 55% in most every area. It is possible, though, that looking all the way from 2004 to 2021, that maybe to the beginning base, which was 2004, maybe was a particularly good year for insects. Okay, and maybe 2021 an especially bad one, but that's just playing the game. The findings in this study nonetheless are consistent with other research around the whole world, showing us that we are losing insects at an alarming rate, folks. A series of studies in 2019 found that global mass of insects has shrunk by 2.5% a year, okay, and this is the hard thing to swallow. Right now it appears that a good number of our insects are going extinct 8 times faster even than our reptiles, our birds, and our mammals. We're losing insects so fast, there's some we're never even going to know about. Every year, dozens of new insects are discovered, some that could give us medicinal qualities and other things that we don't even know are available yet. I mean, think about it. Insects face a lot of overlapping threats, including, number one, destruction of wild habitats. We have to, I guess. Farming, urbanization. The one that I hate that is controllable and we don't try is pesticides. And of course, its first cousin and probably more broadly used in any places now than pesticide is herbicides. You think, well, that just kills plants. I wish that were true. I actually just did another piece of this very show on a very dangerous long-term herbicide called glyphosate. Give it a listen if you've got the time. Goes without saying, of course, that insects play a vital role in pollinating crops, consuming waste material, killing other pests, and as essential parts of an entire multiple ecosystem that's all intertwined. Severe insect declines will potentially have dire global ecological and economic consequences, unfortunately, maybe sooner than we are even aware of. For those of you who listened to me for years know I spent some time, a fair amount of time, in a place called Galapagos, Ecuador. Back way when, folks. I was a college student. I won't tell you how old I am now, but it's in excess of 50 years. But the Galapagos Islands are still famous for their tortoises. The guess is a few million years ago, some of these giant tortoises managed somehow to float across from South America. That's where their nearest bloodline seemed to be coming from. They don't really swim, so perhaps they found their way on driftwood or on floating debris of some kind. Since they really can't swim, so they had to make do with whatever island that they landed on and what other animals or tortoises might have made it to that island. Because they were so isolated, the result was a rapid evolution of tortoise species in Galapagos. Even after the loss of many, and I'll talk about that in a minute, there's still 14 different species of giant tortoise in that archipelago. Centuries ago, tortoise populations of Galapagos were decimated by European sailors who hunted them just for food. The giant reptiles could be kept alive on ships with little or no food for months. They just roll them around their backs and drove them with them. That way, the giant tortoises could be kept alive on ships for months without even giving them any food or water. So they became a great source of meat, which is sometimes hard to come by when you're floating around the world. On the island of Fernandina, there was a species of Galapagos tortoise known as the fantastic giant tortoise. Only a single one of these was ever found, and that was back in 1906, over 100 years ago. It ended up being preserved at a museum as a specimen, all we ever saw. However, And this is where my personal story comes in. That's why I'm telling this story. We went looking for this tortoise and, of course, didn't find any. That's why it's been 100 years. But listen to this. In 2019, a single female tortoise living in Fernandina was located, and they did the genome sequencing, which we can now do. So it has only recently been shown to be successfully true that it is the living species of that more than century-old museum tortoise. It's exactly the same bloodline, which incidentally does make it a different species. Distinct is the word they use than all the others on all the other islands. Very unique. That particular female tortoise has been named Fernanda and now resides at the Galapagos National Park Tortoise Center, which is a rescue and a breeding facility. They were just putting that together years ago when I was there. We know for sure she's over 50 years old. We're not sure how much older. The good news is, the best of the news is, they're back on Fernandina, and recent tracks and scat, you know what scat is, folks, on the island show evidence that there's probably other tortoises of her kind on that island. If that's true and they can find a male tortoise, hopefully, you could really reestablish a tortoise, that's been considered extinct for well over 100 years. What an accomplishment. Give anything to have been a part of that. I should end this by saying we did find some really rare and endangered tortoises on some of the other islands, which were brought back to the Darwin Foundation and are now repopulating. One is from the Hood Island, repopulating those islands with tortoises that would have never gone back had it not been for human intervention. So while I'm not big on keeping things in cages much, in this particular case, it gave us bloodlines to put a whole species back where it should have been. But unfortunately, we extirpated it, humans eating them. Now we're protecting them. So what goes around sometimes actually comes around. Thanks for listening. Sometimes I do go off on things that I've been involved in all my life. I hope you appreciate that, though. And tell your friends about Organic Matters. I'll say real quick here again, the easiest way to get all the shows directly is just to go to bruce.dooley.com, 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 and it'll bring you a couple of hundred shows. And you can also go and find this show on Podbean Podcast, iHeartRadio, about 10 different podcast outlets carry my show. I don't even know which ones all of them are anymore. But adding up all together, I got a pretty good following. So appreciate you staying tuned and look for me next week. Organic.